The opinions voiced in this podcast are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriate qualified professional prior to making a decision. I'm Hank Stoltz, and this is the Clear Path Financial Podcast. And joining us now, the president, financial advisor for Clear Path Financial Partners, Ryan Kittredge. Ryan, good to have you here to share your expertise. We appreciate it.
Good to be here as always, Hank. This has been a lot of fun, and looking forward to talking with you today.
Well, we're through tax season for those who filed on time. But I do think, Ryan, that people, you know, they go through, it's January or it's April 15th. There are times during the year and times during our life when we take a minute and we say, boy, where are we? Where are we going? People are invested and the clock just keeps ticking. So where you were on January 1st or an April 15th when you were 25 years old and starting your career, or you're a little more settled in your 40s or your 50s, but now you're thinking, hey, when is it that I'm going to retire? What is it that I want out of life? And all of a sudden, mm-hmm. you know, you can start to see, well, it's not that many years away. What age am I going to be able to retire at? Am I working until I am 70? But all of a sudden, when that's on the horizon, I'm sure people start to ask the questions. You know, when you have just X number of years left to work, Ryan, talk to us today a little bit about that, about those in investments, about how you look at things and the people who are your clients when they're younger, when they're kind of middle of the career or midlife, and then particularly as they get closer to retirement.
Yeah, absolutely. This is something that comes up a lot. And I don't know what it is with the seasonality, these conversations about people wanting to be done at a certain point or have the ability to retire. It seems like the springtime, they come about. I don't know if it's in New England, people having just endured another winter, and then they, you know, the baseball starting up, and we've got the summer along the way. And we have more people that in the fall were like, no, I think I'm good. Like, I'm going to keep working for another few years. And I've had a couple conversations just in the past week or two where they're like, you know what? I don't know if I want to do that, actually. Like, I think I might want to be done later this year or by next year, not, you know, 3 to 5 years out. There's a lot to think about there. Absolutely. And, you know, our practice is more focused on later career professionals that we take up until and really prepare for and then take them through retirement in that transition. And there's a lot of moving parts. But going back to, you know, somebody who's on the younger side could be just starting off in their 20s or in their 30s or even, you know, even in their 40s. With investments, especially when you're thinking about retirement plans, right? You're putting into an IRA or you've got your 401k. You tend to be pretty aggressive, and usually that makes a lot of sense. And by aggressive, I mean mostly or fully in stock allocation, which can certainly, and it does, bring a higher level of risk, so to speak. But if it's money that you're not using for 25, 30 years, it's okay, because in every instance, if you're broadly diversified and you own different types of stocks across industries, they will recover. And sometimes they're down for a year or two, and sometimes it's several years before the markets make a full recovery. If we think back to 2008, you know, the couple years on the downtrend and then another 3 and change, 4 years just to get back to where you were. So when you're younger and you have time, that actually works in your favor if you're saving out of your paycheck and putting away money, because as the market dips, great, you're putting away the same amount of money, but you're buying more shares of all of those great companies that create the goods and services that the world uses. So you end up doing pretty well for yourself. But as you approach the point where you're no longer contributing, but you actually want to start using some of that money, it's a bit of a different paradigm.
So as we get closer to retirement, if there's somebody who in their 20s, 30s, 40s, they got involved, maybe they got involved through their business in that 401k, I think that's how so many Americans, mm-hmm. of course, save today, and they probably filled something out. Hey, you know, do you want to be a little more aggressive? Do you want us to put your money into stocks and maybe, you know, not be as aggressive? But then you've taken that, Ryan, and you kind of threw it in a drawer when you were 25, now you're 55. You need to take a look at that and say, maybe I don't want to be as aggressive now. Is that something that you need to evaluate as you get closer to retirement?
Absolutely important to evaluate that. Yeah, and depending on the plan, you know, they're very different. There are more 401k plans these days that have some kind of default settings. So there used to be, you know, you would have to choose your own investment options. And if you didn't pick anything, it usually just went into like cash or a fixed account or something like that. And if you didn't enroll or change your deferral percentage, nothing was coming out of your paycheck or it never went up. A lot of plans nowadays have like auto enrollments, and they, at least if you don't choose something, there's usually a default option that's some type of a diversified mix of assets in what are called typically target date funds. So you know, everyone from Fidelity, Vanguard, T. Rowe Price, you name it, American funds, they all have these target date series, and they'll have the Vanguard 2030 fund and the 2055 fund. And there are some limitations there, but at least it gets people in a mix that is usually not completely inappropriate. So it like kind of keeps you on track, but that's still a small percentage of plans. And so, yeah, I mean, one thing that we do see commonly are existing clients or especially potential clients that we haven't worked yet with, but they're reaching out to us and talking about, hey, we want to get everything squared away. We want to be really well positioned when the time comes. We want to have a game plan. We don't want to just go into this blind with a wish that everything's going to work out fine. Like, we want a well mapped out plan. So what do we need to be doing about it now? And one common thing is that, yeah, people have not changed their investment allocation. And even when you're 55 versus 62, but you plan to go at 65 and be done working, that's a hugely different time horizon, you know, a few years versus, you know, 15 years. So there's a tendency to sort of keep what you've had. And the other piece of it too, which is why I find that a lot of pre-retirees tend to be at this point a little bit, on average, probably a little more aggressive than they should be, is that stocks have done so well over the last 10 years. Of course, they've had ups and downs like you're always going to see. And a couple of years ago, we had a severe downturn. But it's been actually a really good decade for stocks, especially U.S. large companies that are growth oriented. So especially like big technology companies, those kind of favorites, you know, the Apples and Amazons of the world, they've done exceptionally well. And so there's sometimes a hesitancy with clients to say, well, those things have done really well, though. Shouldn't I just keep more of the things that have made me more money and not have these other things that haven't done as well, like my international stocks or my smaller mid-cap, kind of like Russell 2000 type stocks, or my bonds or my money market? And so that has been challenging as well, because, I mean, it's very different than a decade ago. When I think about back in 2012, or I mean, geez, like I started the industry in 06. After 08, 09, after that damage that happened, people were very hesitant to take on risk. They didn't want to, they didn't have as much faith in real estate. They saw that real estate could lose significant value in a short period of time. They talked about their portfolios, their 401ks losing half their value. And so at that point, for people approaching retirement only, you know, a few years after the recovery had happened, they totally got it. They were like, yeah, no, we don't want to see that again. So we definitely want to be diversified and not have that level of risk. But coming off of this time period, it's really paid to take that risk. But that doesn't necessarily mean that will continue going forward, especially now that we're in a higher interest rate, more inflationary, kind of more tepid growth period of the economy. The same investments aren't always going to be the winners. The ones of the past decade that have done the best usually aren't the best of the following.
Ryan, kind of keeping that same investment strategy at 62 or 65 that maybe you had at 45 or 55, that sounds to me like that's kind of maybe a common pitfall. Are there some other common pitfalls or mistakes that people make as they get closer to that retirement age that you see and that are things that, hey, you want to make sure that you don't fall into that trap?
There's a lot. And some of the ones that I see most commonly, just aside from how things are allocated and maybe not being as diversified as they thought, right? They might say, well, I've got an S&P 500 index fund and I've got this large cap growth fund and I've got this, you know, other stock market fund. And you look and there's so much overlap and you realize that 25% of the account is in like six stocks and it may not be as diversified as they think. So that's one thing. Another one, though, is just the asset allocation and the investment mix in different types of accounts. So one thing that we see very commonly are they kind of have this really piecemeal strategy where things are wildly different. And they'll admit, they're like, there's no strategy here. Like, we opened up this IRA 20 years ago. It's what it was in. You know, what it was in then is what it's in now. And then I had this company plan and my brother-in-law told me to do it this way, so I did that. And then I went to this other company, and my, you know, my manager, he's a pretty sharp guy. He had me set up this way. And we look at things, and there's like no discernible strategy. So that's sometimes that, and clearly that's an issue and for a number of reasons. But the other thing I see on the other, on kind of the other side of the spectrum, is that every type of account they have is invested the same way, whether it's their 401k, a Roth IRA, their taxable investment account, and they're all lined up the same way, but there's missed opportunity cost there because even if someone is on average, let's call them a moderate risk person, right? Like they need some balance. Maybe it's someone like we're talking about approaching retirement. They're not taking income now, but they're about to start. They still want growth, but they need a little bit of a buffer. They kind of need, you know, some parts of the portfolio that are a bit more predictable. But then it's the same allocation in every single account where we look at what's the expected time horizon. And if, for instance, for a lot of people, it's kind of a generality, but for many clients, they tend to be more aggressive in their IRAs and then, you know, more conservative in their brokerage account. Maybe they hold a lot of cash. When from a tax efficiency standpoint, and not to delve too into taxes because we did quite a bit of that on the last show, but everything comes out of the traditional IRA or 401k is ordinary income. So that's where you want to hold more of your money market funds or your bond funds or non-qualified stocks, things like that. Whereas with a Roth IRA, you get tax-free accumulation. And with a taxable investment account, you get tax-preferred rates from qualified dividends and capital gains. So without getting more technical, there's a huge advantage by positioning each account based on its tax status, but also the expected time for a draw on that particular account. Because you could have a person who's retiring tomorrow, and it may be completely appropriate for them to have one account that's 100% in stocks or like very aggressive, as long as we've got a plan. And they say, well, no, I've got my cash buffer here. I've got this slice of my traditional IRA, and then I'm going to have this pension income. So with those things, we kind of piece it together, and it still supports having some accounts that are more aggressive, some are more conservative based on their intended purpose.
This is the Clear Path Financial Partners, a podcast. You know, Ryan, as we're talking this morning, I mean, 401k, IRAs, this is the way that Americans today really invest and save for the future. What about, and I don't know if they're as popular, but I'm sure that the larger companies, the Saint-Gobains of the world, or you know, other multinational companies who still continue to give a pension, who maybe even give stock options to those in their upper echelon, and that as some people may have not only their IRA, but also will be, well, here's what my pension is going to provide. What's the advice there?
Yeah, definitely, and a couple different pieces to that, right? So pensions, and there's the state pensions, there are federal pensions, those work differently. We could have a whole show on that, but I'll talk about private pensions. And the biggest employer locally, yeah, we have clients Saint-Gobain. There are numerous employers that still have pensions. A lot of them, and I think of like a client from IBM, you know, he had a pension. If you join the company today, you don't have a pension, right? So a lot of these clients that are closer to retirement may have these, whereas, you know, for instance, in that IBM plan, they shut down their pension several years back, whatever you were vested in, you were vested in. And then they said, hey, here's the 401k. We'll give a little bit higher match, but we're not, you know, giving you a pension anymore. So for those people, like locally, the one that we see the most often is UMass. We have a lot of UMass employees. They've got a great pension plan, and they are faced with options of whether they take monthly income called like through like monthly annuity payments. And if they do that, how much do they choose as a survivor benefit? And they're taking a haircut to have a benefit for their spouse that would cover both of their lives. Or they have to choose between that or in a lump sum option where they're managing it on their own and they have more flexibility, but they don't have those same guarantees. So it's with those options, you know, with the pension choices, I mean, UMass specifically has really strong monthly income relative to the lump sum. For most clients, the monthly income will make sense. But I've also had clients that have retired. They have enough in liquid assets and monthly income. And they say, you know what, I don't really need monthly income. And by the way, my health isn't all that great. And I may not live to a kind of a normal or beyond life expectancy. But legacy is really important to me, so I want to choose the lump sum so that the payments just don't end when I die, and I'd rather preserve it and grow it because I may not need it, but I want it to be there for my kids and my grandkids. So there's all those kind of considerations, and you want to, again, have a game plan before you get to the point where HR says, oh, by the way, fill out this pension paperwork and let us know what you want to do, because it's irrevocable. There's tax decisions. There's estate planning consequences, so that's a big one. And then you mentioned like stock plans like Saint-Gobain or, you know, some of the other ones we have clients with, Verizon, Johnson & Johnson, Oracle, Vertex. And I could say a lot about them, but what I'll say is for people approaching retirement who have worked for one of those great companies for a long time tend to be overly concentrated in their own company stock. And why is partially they received a lot of compensation in company stock and they may not have known what their options were. So we've had a lot of people that are like, yeah, no, I get those grants and I just kind of accumulate them and I just let them kind of ride. And guess what? Like the company's done well. So it's been a great, you know, move for me because Johnson & Johnson's been a great company. And that's true, right? But for the same reason as we talked about with the asset allocation, having a massive chunk in one company plan may not be the best move when it comes time to be needing liquidity from your investments and you want to take income from it. So there's a lot of things, a lot of considerations, but normally what we do with those are have people transfer those positions in kind. So you keep all those stock shares, but then we look at each lot, like each time they were gifted a grant or they got an option, what the cost basis was, what the value is today. And then we know what the tax consequence is and we can determine when to sell certain lots. We can analyze the stock and we can diversify out of it if it makes sense, or if they it makes sense to keep a bigger chunk, but they want to alleviate the risk of it all of a sudden, you know, one drug that doesn't get FDA approval and then they have bad earnings and, you know, stock goes down 20% the next year. They can mitigate that risk by putting in some like basically sell orders so that if it triggers a certain price, you get liquidated value at a set price. So they're called like stop loss orders. And that's a way to one tactic for allowing people to keep, you know, retain that position in those stock, but also put a floor on it.
And the theme today really seems to be that there's a difference, right? I mean, I'm 55 years old and I'm 62. and at 55 and I've still got 10 to 15 years, that's actually vastly different than 62 and I've got 3 years or just 6 or 7 years, even though my difference between how I feel at 55 and 62 may not be different at all, and it's just that at 7 years. But investment-wise, that seems like, you know, that there's a real difference in what we want to be looking at. And I was wondering, too, if that kind of goes back to something you said at the beginning. We've had 10 years of a pretty good stock market. Somebody may be riding a pretty good hot streak and say, boy, my 401k is doing fine, my IRA, look at my investments, and I can retire a little bit earlier. But the thing about the stock market is there is always that volatility. What do we need to know about the market itself as we get closer to that retirement age, and how do we protect against some of that volatility?
Yeah, those are great questions. And you need to periodically, we do this pretty regularly, but self-directed investors, someone doing it on their own, doesn't need to review it as regularly, but you do need to take a look at the investments that you own, like what's changed with them. And what I mean by that is we can look at both passive investments like index funds or actively managed funds like certain mutual funds or other strategies. And for instance, index funds, they've changed a lot in and of themselves. I kind of alluded to it earlier, but if you think about the different industries that make up the stock market, right? You've got all different ones, right? You've got financial companies, banks, insurance companies, you've got automakers and healthcare companies and tech companies and consumer products and gas and oil, energy, infrastructure, all these things. What's changed a lot this past 10 years is because of how much the more innovative technology-driven companies like a Tesla or a Google or Alphabet, as they're called now, most recently NVIDIA, this big microchip company that was a fraction of how big it was only a handful of years ago, and now it's bigger than most countries in terms of its value, which is insane. But people can be pretty surprised by seeing that if you lump in the technology with communication services, which include companies like Facebook and Google, that of an S&P 500, you go back 10 years, those companies comprised about 20% of the total market. Now they're about 40% of the market. So there's a huge concentration in those very big tech companies. Now, it's great when the economy is growing and they're being innovative and growing their profitability, but when there's a downturn or there's a more stagnant economy, those blue chip companies, when you think of like a Johnson & Johnson or a Procter & Gamble or a McDonald's or something like that, these kind of ballast companies that don't usually make as much in a big up market, but they don't lose as much in a downturn or recession. They pay dividends. Those tend to be more valuable. And so even with just index investing, people may realize they're not as diversified as they may have thought.
I was just going to say, as we've got just a couple of minutes left as well, any other sort of different types of investment or different, because again, going with it's different investment levels, different times of your life, just, the ways in which there are these differences in our last couple of minutes together.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I'll say just the only other point I was going to make about mutual funds is that things change with mutual funds. You can have a fantastic fund run by a great portfolio manager and research team, and that person can retire and the fund can change its strategy. So you have to take a look at criteria like, well, how long has this team that's been running the fund actually been running the fund? And what's their success record in relative to the risk they take? How much, you can even look at factors like how much of their own money do they invest in their own fund? Like, do they eat their own cooking kind of thing? So there are these screening criteria that you can use. Morningstar.com is a pretty good resource for that. So that's one thing to consider. And then, beyond just stocks and bonds, there are other alternative investments that can make sense as well. There are, and not for every investor, but for a lot of them, things like adding in, especially with yields the way they are now, short-term CDs or government treasuries, very safe, pay a great yield in the current interest rate environment. Gold shares or other precious metals, you can have hedge strategies, you can have private investments like direct, you know, investments in non-public companies. So there's all these other flavors. Some of them, they obviously come with different levels of risk and reward. There are reasons to consider beyond sort of the very traditional portfolio, adding some other things that could potentially reduce volatility and correlation and still help people meet their goals. So there's a lot to consider, Hank. Obviously, it's fun to kind of roll up the sleeves and dig into that, analyzing those things and helping people to maybe see blind spots that they missed or opportunities that they weren't thinking of.
I sense a part two coming on the next podcast of ClearPath Financial Partners. Ryan Kittredge, thank you so much for, as always, sharing the knowledge.
Thank you, Hank.
We appreciate it. Remember that you do indeed want to get in touch with ClearPath Financial Partners. Best way for them to do that, Ryan, to get in contact with you, to get in touch with ClearPath.
Our website is clearpathfinancialpartners.com. And there's a ton of good information there that you can see, everything from what we actually do and for who we do it for and how it's done. Or you can certainly give us a call and set up an introductory call. Happy to chat with anybody and give advice. And also, if people are considering hiring a professional, we can give them questions to ask and criteria to consider when they're looking at considering us and other firms, because there's a ton of options out there. So we can help decipher some of that. So our phone number is 508-219-7221.
I'm Hank Stoltz for Ryan Kittredge. Thank you so much for joining us on this month's episode of A ClearPath Financial Partners, a podcast. And we will join you next month as we talk about some more of the issues of the day. The opinions voiced in this podcast are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriate qualified professional prior to making a decision.